Back Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs on Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, this podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk was listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
Sweet. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is Back Talk. Now, Ken, enormous amount of respect for you. 2 weeks ago, you said to me, the best movie I've seen this year so far. And I said, okay, we're doing it. I don't even have to vet this movie to know that I'm having a show on it when you say that. It is called Detective Chinatown 1900. What is this thing?
I don't know as we've ever done a Mandarin language film before.
I don't think so.
And I think it's overdue because the last couple of Mandarin films that have come to the United States have been very, very good. This one is absolutely terrific. It is a fun, over-the-top, screwball comedy. Well, let's talk about what it is. It is a murder mystery, action-adventure, comedy, political thriller. How about that?
No, it is, and you did a nice job. And my feeling about the film, it's overstuffed.
Oh, yeah. There's so much going on all the time. But what impressed me about this movie is how it manages just to play this balancing act between three sets of characters whose lives converge in Chinatown in San Francisco in 1900, while at the same time talking about social issues of the era. This film is about the xenophobia that the Chinese immigrants faced in 1900, working on the railroads and living in San Francisco, and how they were almost purged from San Francisco because of racial intolerance.
Well, as a matter of fact, wasn't there truly legislation called the Chinese Exclusion Act?
And this is what's great about this movie. All of the things they touch upon in this is factual. This, like much of the Chinese films that come to the United States, there's a political element to it. They want to get a message to American audiences and to their own audiences about history, about the history of the Chinese people. And they do a very good job of being very accurate. Yeah. I give them a lot of credit.
And as many people would know, they're not maudlin about it. And they haven't done what we kind of the stereotypical view of them pounding the table, saying how unjust the world is.
No, how easy it would have been to have made this movie just strictly about the xenophobia and make it a dark film about abusing Chinese railroad workers. But no, we get a screwball action comedy kind of in the style of Katharine Hepburn and Cary Grant.
And in fact, we have John Cusack.
We do.
Playing a bad boy Republican.
Playing boy Republican governor, I believe, whose daughter has been killed.
Yeah.
And we have a character who's been traveling America with Sherlock Holmes. And Holmes is called upon to solve this murder mystery, but has no interest.
This young man, he actually wears the typical...
he wears the deerstalker cap, yes. Yeah.
And he's supposedly deputized by and or a student of Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
Yes, so we see it right away. That alone, just seeing the kid with the stalker and doing some Sherlock Holmes type stuff.
See, I'm laughing just thinking about this movie.
It interests me as well. Is seeing Chow Yun-fat.
Yes.
Oh, how delightful. What a... From Crouching Tiger on.
Yeah.
He's a presence.
And everybody in this movie is at the top of their game. It's a long movie, but it goes by so fast.
You think? Yes, it is long.
You don't feel like you've been in the theater for 2.5 hours. It's because the action never stops. You're on a roller coaster ride, carried along with the other characters are these three martial arts experts who were sent by the Dowager Empress of China to go to San Francisco to find and retrieve this political dissident.
Yes, yes, yeah.
And then on top of that, we've got the wealthy Chinese son of businessman who is involved in this murder mystery as well.
Well, is he accused?
He's accused of the murder.
And this is Chow Yun-fat's son.
This is his son, yes.
Yeah.
And he's accused of the murder, and he plays the role of the person telling the audience about what's going on in Chinatown, what's going on in America in 1900, and how the Chinese are being treated.
Well, let me say one diverting element of this, and one that convinced me right away we had to do this, was the very name Chinatown.
Yes.
Because one of the favorites and our buddy Wayne's favorite movie of all time is Chinatown.
Chinatown.
Now, we know that, as you pointed out, there's nothing in Chinatown about Chinatown.
No, no.
In that movie with Jack Nicholson. But it does cast up all over the whole thing. It is China. You know, it's the last line.
Yes.
Something like relax. This is Chinatown.
This is Chinatown. Right, yes.
Right. And isn't that interesting? Detective Chinatown 1900. Right away, I'm caught by the name of one of the best films ever made, Chinatown.
Chinatown.
And it draws me in, and it's part of the whole fabric of their just having a good time with what they're doing.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what movie this reminds me of? It reminds me of Pirates of the Caribbean. in the way that Pirates of the Caribbean kept itself very lighthearted, but got into some very dark themes and topics, and never stopped moving at a mile a minute. And it has that same feel. You just swept up into it like a Disney ride, and you're just really enjoying it, and you're learning about American history in the process.
Yeah. And being aware of what we had done to the Chinese in exploiting them.
Yeah.
And I think it brings that very well, and it does it in the best possible way by making fun of it.
Actually, I give the Chinese, because all the Chinese movies have to pass through a political review in China to make sure that they meet Chinese political standards, and I give them a lot of credit for really keeping this in the background. It's not shoved down your throat, and at the end of the day, you're going, oh my God, did we really do that? Wow, that's a dark time for America.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're getting this in a screwball comedy, so it's much, much more palatable. It's much easier to take in this kind of a situation.
All right, Ken, besides the fact that I'm not really good about films that have way too many characters and too much action, that's why I really needed you. But I'll tell you one thing. I don't know if anybody would notice this. I could barely read the subtitles. They go so fast.
Mandarin is a fast language.
Wow.
Mandarin is spoken at 70 or 80 words a minute.
Whoa.
So unless you're a speed reader, you need to get. You're going to have to get your game on subtitles go by a mile a minute,
yeah.
And you will miss stuff if you blink. It is not an easy subtitled film to read.
Yeah, right. Why should anybody who's listening to us go to see this thing? It's playing in only a couple of theaters.
It's playing in a couple of theaters. It's a sold-out audiences. It's playing at a couple of the big AMCs, and it's doing gangbuster business. Now, part of that is because there's a large Chinese population here in Columbus who can go and don't have to read the subtitles.
Well, as a matter of fact, we didn't mention this. This is a prequel to a couple of other iterations of this that have been very, very popular around the world.
But it stands completely on its own.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
right,
you don't have to see it in conjunction with any other movie.
It's not like the current Captain America where you should have seen
You've got to have seen 10 other movies to really pigeonhole that movie where it belongs.
This is my stuffed month. That's another one. That's another one that has way too many for me. I like the simple fare.
Oh, yeah. And I just knew that you would enjoy this movie, John, because it is such a lighthearted, fun romp, but it is also an educational film.
Yeah.
It is a film that will teach you a little bit about things that maybe weren't going so well back in the early 1900s.
Well, recap for us then. Most of our audience is white. They're not Chinese. So this is new territory. What do you advise our audience?
I would advise you that if you think you can keep up with the subtitles, go see this. It's a fun, lighthearted, it's a great date movie. Again, if you can keep up with the subtitles.
Yes.
There's nothing offensive in this movie. It's a throwback to the great Sherlock Holmes adventures. It's a throwback to films like Pirates of the Caribbean. It has so much going for it. There's a reason why this movie has been playing to sold-out audiences.
For those of us, and I'm in a place like Columbus, we're always interested in the cross-cultural experience. This is a really good one, but I wouldn't be uptight as I get. If I miss a word, I'm just crying. So don't be like me and actually enjoy it. If you miss some words, forget it, because you'll see visually, you'll see what's happening.
Oh, yeah.
And eventually it all gets explained, and you have your two English-speaking characters. And
there's some great martial arts battles in this, which, of course, need no subtitles. And there's references to a lot of American history in it, but it's done in such a way that it's fun and lighthearted, much the same way you might learn a little Caribbean history from watching Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes.
Same thing going on here.
And we used to always make jokes about Asian titles. They're always too expressive. They're way too. So this one's a little bit of a clunky title. Detective Chinatown
1900.
but we got it. Well, I think you're right. It was actually only a seat or two available to me when I went to see it.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I know that Friday and Saturday it was sold out at one of the local big theaters.
Yeah. I mentioned Crouching Tiger because I'm a typical know-nothing about Asian films, and that's the only one I could... The only one I could pull out. But
Crouching Tiger is probably not a good example because that was a Western production.
Yeah,
that was not a film produced in China. let's talk for a second about the Chinese movie industry today. This movie, Detective Chinatown 1900, took about 4 years to film at a budget of about $250 million. Right now, China is in about the same place with their movie industry that we were in the United States in 2019, before COVID. They're making huge budget movies, $200, $250 million movies that are playing worldwide to sold-out audiences, raking in the money. Mm-hmm. Right now, American film industry is struggling, trying to make $5 million, $6 million movies that make money because the days of $1 billion movies like Ford versus Ferrari or Mufasa seem to have passed us by. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case in China. China right now is making the big budget movies and trying to hit the $1 billion mark.
Well, and India has really taken hold.
India's Bollywood is, yeah.
If you want to stream something that is fascinating, epic, RRR
is a fantastic film.
I think it is wonderful. It's full of heroics, and there's a stuffed movie that I really like.
The biggest problem I have with Bollywood is they're churning out so many films, and so many of their films are very similar.
Now, the difference is that this is Tamil, actually not quite Bollywood. It is made by a different area.
Okay.
It is, you're exactly right. It is Bollywood, but it's Bollywood with a difference. At least
every once in a while, Bollywood will make a movie that draws me in. They just did one recently called Air Force, which was about the air war in between India and Pakistan in 1967. And darned if the air combat was very well done. I mean, it's the sort of thing that an aviation buff would really enjoy. But getting back to Chinese films, so what we have been getting into the United States, of course, is just a fraction of what the Chinese film industry is making, but it's the best of the best. Because I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago, we had a very good World War II movie about a Chinese factory that was under siege by the Japanese, and it's the battle of the Chinese resistance forces inside this factory building. And that was unusual because that one, those forces were under the control of Chiang Kai-shek, and that is a subject that you don't talk about that much in China today. But we've also had a couple of big-budget science fiction films that have come out of China in the last couple of years, Wandering Earth and Wandering Earth 2. Both of these huge-budget movies, science fiction, about the sun is going to do something bad and the earth is going to be moved to another solar system. And the special effects were tremendous.
Well, and we had something from Japan recently, Godzilla.
Oh, well, Japan is always good for its monster movies. Yeah. Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. Yes. Japan makes a lot of wonderful films. The thing that most distinguishes the Chinese films is there is a political ideology that has to go through every Chinese film. But again, being respectful of that, I've seen films from a lot of different nations that want to incorporate their ideologies, and usually it's very heavy-handed, very noticeable, and it dogs down the plot. But not with the Chinese films. When they want the film to be popular over here, they try to tone it down a little bit and make it a little more palatable to us, so we're still getting the message, we're still getting the history, but they're doing it in such a way that you almost kind of get caught up in it. You're thinking, oh, wow, that's something I didn't know. And then you go back and you research it a little bit and you find out, wow, they actually got everything right. Chinese films, again, the ones we get here in the United States, best of the best. We're not getting the soap operas. We're getting the big films, the Wandering Earths, Factory Film, and, of course, this film, Detective Chinatown, which is breaking box office records all over the world, and especially in the United States, where it's playing to, as you found, to sold-out audiences.
Interestingly enough, very early on, Akira Kurosawa directed a couple of Asian detective films.
Yes, he did.
Can you believe that?
Yes,
I mean,
he did.
I'm looking at this and say, Akira Kurosawa?
Well,
wow.
Stanley Kubrick directed, not Asian, but detective films early on, too.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a good way to get into the industry. Film noir is also a great way. We were just talking about that the other day.
Yeah. In that 1949 Stray Dog, it was called by Kurosawa. Toshiro Mifune.
Toshiro you remember Mifune. Of course. The Harrison Ford of Japan.
And he also had him in High and Low in 63. One that people will say, well, I know Asian films because I've seen a Jackie Chan film. Is that seeing a Chinese film?
And of course it's actually seen a Hong Kong film is what you're seeing. You're seeing Hong Kong martial arts films.
Oh, good.
Which is sort of a genre unto itself, less reliance on a strong narrative, more on just a lot of action fight sequences.
Okay, yeah. And then another one stars Jet Li. Is it? Mm-hmm. Do you remember Jet Li?
No, Jet Li, of course.
Yeah, right. Wow.
There was a time in the 70s when martial arts films were huge because they could be filmed on shoestring budgets. All you had to do was come up with some storyline about some mobster kidnapping somebody's daughter and then have lots and lots of fight scenes, and you'd pack the house. And all of these movies made money.
You mentioned the Hong Kong film.
Oh, yeah.
In 1989, one of my great actors is, and we mentioned him, Chow Yun-fat, was mm-hmm. in Wild Search in 1989 and set in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
It's a detective film. Isn't that nice? And he's 1989, and the guy looks great in the current film, in the detective
film. Looks in Detective Chinatown 1900, he looks fantastic. He carries the role beautifully. And it's nice to see somebody from the grand days of martial arts films manage to get in there.
Another one whom our audience might know, this is drawing our audience in by saying, hey, this is not foreign territory. Yeah. Michelle Yeoh.
Michelle Yeoh, yes.
In several films. And she, by gosh, she is still
alive.
One that I found really amusing. 1974, The Shrine of Ultimate Bliss, starring, and only you, some people in our audience are going to know who this is. George Lazenby?
Oh, gosh, our second James Bond, yes. George was such a roller coaster ride. I mean, the man owned the world for about 3 months when he got the Bond role. And people to this day, and I agree, still think he is one of the top three Bonds for that one
role.
Yeah,
you're right.
If you haven't seen it, On Her Majesty's Secret Service is one of the best Bond films of all time. And in my opinion, the one that's truest to the Fleming novels.
All right.
It doesn't overindulge itself in the camp. It is very focused on the true Fleming style. There's a moment in On Her Majesty's Secret Service where you see something that you never see in another Bond film. Bond genuinely terrified, thinking he's going to be killed.
Ah.
There's a scene in there where he's hiding in this racetrack where they're running cars on ice in circles. And the bad guys are closing in on him, and they know he's going to find. He knows they're going to find him. He is convinced he's about to be killed, and you'll never see that in another Bond film. I could see On Her Majesty's just about any time. And Lazenby was poised to become the new
poor guy.
I mean, the top of the world, and then he does a Joaquin Phoenix move and decides he's too good for everything, and bails on everything. And the next thing you know, 6 months later, he's reduced to making low-budget martial arts movies just to be able to find a role at all.
Well, for those people who think that everything is USA, even though we're talking about China, we have to mention the Charlie Chan business.
Oh, gosh, yes. Charlie Chan and Bruce Lee. You got to mention the Bruce Lee.
And there was also the Mr. Wong movies
mm-hmm.
and the New Adventures of Charlie Chan TV series. Yeah, now, Wayne would know that. Believe me, Wayne would be all over that. We had Sidney Toller as Charlie Chan. So this was big and perhaps let us think that we really knew the Chinese culture, just the way we thought we knew it on Seinfeld, when the Chinese guy was the maitre d'.
Yes.
That's just great to be.
Yeah, or the last scene in A Christmas Story when they the dogs eat the turkey and they end up at the Chinese restaurant.
Yes.
Trying to do Jingle Bells. The Chinese films of today, though, are such a cut above the stock, low-budget martial arts movies that existed just to make a buck. You know, today the Chinese films are really trying to impress upon audiences, not just in America, but around the world, hey, we are a culture that's come of age, we are an art that's come of age, and we have something to say.
And one of the things that I very much like about them is their sense of humor.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Particularly in this detective movie that we saw today. They do have it.
Now, they don't always have the sense of humor. Goodness knows the Wandering Earth movies did not.
Oh, okay.
But this movie definitely done as a screwball comedy.
Oh,
no
yeah.
question about
and
it.
And don't you think there's lightness in Jackie Chan's?
There is definitely lightness in Jackie Chan's.
But Jackie Chan's never pretended to be reflective of the Chinese culture.
Well, if you don't have some kind of comedy in these martial arts movies, they come across as just, it's like playing a video game otherwise. It's one big battle after another. You know who's going to win. If there's not something cute going on to make you want to see the good guy win, it just gets tedious and repetitive. One thing I do want to say, though, about what China's doing, and there's a hint of Chinese sociology in Detective Chinatown 1900.
All right.
As we get to the end, without giving any spoilers away, there's a comment about China is not there yet, but we're going to be a great world power. Here in America, you got to sort of step back and go, what do you mean you're not there yet? You have the biggest Air Force and best Air Force in the world, the biggest Navy in the world. You have a standing army of 3 million people. You are there. You are the big gorilla in the room. So it's interesting to see that within China, there's still an attitude of, we haven't risen, we haven't found ourselves on the world stage yet, but we want to be, when in fact, outside of China, we're looking at you as, you're there, you're huge.
The last part of the film.
Yeah, the third act.
Becomes really dogmatic as far as what we had anticipated but didn't have the first two-thirds of the movie, mm-hmm. would you say?
Yeah, we don't get the screwball ending.
There is commentary on their place in the world, as you have said. There is a suggestion still of bellicose attitude. That is, that's not all sweet as we have preached in the first two-thirds mm-hmm. of this film. The brotherhood spirit, the mixing of races, you know.
Yeah.
It's not all that. I think you were saying that, and I just wanted to reinforce what you were
they're
saying.
They're not trying to impress upon anybody that they're a threat. There's absolutely nothing in the third act of this movie that makes you think the Chinese government is trying to say, better watch out for us because we are coming. No, nothing.
A little bit of that is there, right?
What's there is, we're trying to become somebody. We're not there yet, but it's coming. So Chinese people, be prepared. We're going to rise to the world stage, and we're going to be important. Not threatening, but important.
Yes, very good. So it's called Detective
Chinatown 1900.
And we are both recommending that you see it for a cultural experience that's delightful, not threatening.
And a big thumbs up, but bring your speed reading glasses.